T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to KMOX in your car, on your radio.com app at work. Stay connected.
And good evening, everybody. John Hancock in. It's at your service. I'll be here until 10 o'clock tonight. Then Ryan Recker takes over. He's back in the saddle for Overnight America. Mike Anderson and I will traverse the next 2 hours with you. Got some special guests coming up your way. And I promise I'm not going to talk a lot about politics tonight. But I did see this news just come in out of Florida that's really infuriating to me. So, you know, they're doing these machine recounts down there. And two of the really Democratic counties, one of them is Broward County. And there's another county down there, Hillsborough County. And they did the recounts. And both of those counties submitted their recount numbers too late. And so they reverted back to their original vote counts from election night. Well, turns out Rick Scott, the Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, gained 779 votes in Broward County, but those votes now don't get counted because the director of elections down there turned her numbers in too late. And likewise, in Hillsborough County, Rick Scott gained 146 votes, and they didn't turn their numbers in time either. So that's almost 1,000 votes right there. Now, as it stands, according to the count they have now, Rick Scott has a 12,600-some vote lead over the incumbent Bill Nelson, the incumbent senator from Florida, and that's going to stand up. It's, you know, so they're not going to be able to. But, man, you know, you have to take the integrity of our election system and treat it with – it's got to be treated very lovingly. It's the foundation bulwark upon which our democracy rests. And if you can't trust your elections, then you really don't have any basis to trust the government that flows from those elections. So let's hope they get it right in Florida. I think they're going to. I think Rick Scott's going to be called the senator from there, and I hope it happens sooner rather than later. So that's the extent of all I'm going to really talk a lot about politics tonight. I did want to get into something that was on the ballot here. It didn't get a lot of attention, but the St. Louis Zoo had a 1/8 of a cent sales tax proposal just in St. Louis County. And full disclosure, Michael Kelly, my partner, and I worked on that campaign. And it passed with 61% of the vote in the county. And I don't know that a lot of attention has been drawn on what they're going to do and develop this land. So they bought a plot of land up in Spanish Lake in extreme north St. Louis County, 425 acres, a big parcel of land. It had formerly been owned by the Pipefitters Union. It was a union facility. They've got a golf course on it. It's really quite a lovely piece of property. And so the zoo purchased that property earlier this year, and then they, with the sales tax now, they're going to develop it. Half of it's going to be used for a breeding center, and the other half of it they're going to develop into a wildlife experience. And it might be some version of a safari experience where you go out and, you know, in the zoo, when you go to the city and you go to the zoo, the animals are confined. Well, the safari experience, the people are confined. And you, you know, you either drive through or you zip line through and you experience animals in their natural habitats. It's really cool. So San Diego Zoo has a phenomenal wildlife experience. Several zoos do. And at some point, the St. Louis Zoo's plan is to open up this safari experience. And then the other half of it, we don't think about a lot, is that they need it for breeding. And they're very landlocked at the current zoo, and it's difficult for them to breed animals. Although they did successfully breed this last year, eight baby cheetahs. You may recall seeing those cuddly, cute little baby cheetahs. And, you know, working on the campaign and getting to know some of the folks over at the zoo, I found out a little bit of information. It's really quite fascinating. The process by which, you know, every animal's breeding habits are unique. And these cheetahs, what they do is they take the female that's going to bear the baby the baby cheetahs. And then they take all the male cheetahs that are possible suitors for the female, and they put them in their own little boxes. And then the female goes from box to box, sniffs around, and eventually she settles on the male cheetah that she's going to breed with. And so she actually picks out the guy that's going to father the little cheetah cubs. And it's fascinating what happened this year at the St. Louis Zoo. So the female cheetah, she's going around from box to box. She's sniffing a little bit there and trying to see what's going on. And she picks out her mate, and who happened to be, just fascinating, happened to be the youngest of the male cheetahs, which, of course, made her a cougar. you got a rim shot over there, Anderson? Probably not. That was my little zoo humor for the evening. But it is going to be pretty cool when they get this thing set up. It's going to be quite a facility. Of course, as you know, if you were around on Tuesday evening when I sat here, I'm quite the animal lover, and my own dog Gus. We'll talk to you about his $5,000 surgery, that he is doing great and fully recovered, or at least basically fully recovered. And so today, Gus is 3 years old. So today was like the first real snow that Gus has ever experienced in his short little three-year life, because it just hadn't snowed that much here. And, you know, I may have mentioned that Gus believes that he is an Icelandic sheepdog, even though he's a mutt. But he kind of looks like an Icelandic sheepdog, and he certainly behaves like an Icelandic sheepdog, and I think he fully believes that he is, in fact, an Icelandic sheepdog. So as an Icelandic sheepdog, he was out in the snow today, man. He had an absolute blast, and just loving it, rolling around. And then it dawned on me, Georgianne, when she feeds Gus at night, she'll put a little salmon. Mix a little salmon in with his food. You know, being an Icelandic sheepdog, that's what they eat. They eat a lot of salmon out there. So Gus had a perfect Icelandic sheepdog day, rolling around in the snow and enjoying a little salmon with his dry food. So cheers to Gus. We appreciate that. Well, we've got a full show for you this evening, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we're going to visit with an attorney from Los Angeles, Southern California. He's living through these fires. His property hasn't experienced any loss, but he certainly has seen a lot of the tragedy and the carnage up close. And it's, you know, you think about the frequency of these things and how often these fires are breaking out in that state and the loss of life. I think we're over 50 people in the northern part of the state that they've identified as having lost their lives in these fires. So that's certainly a tragedy. So we're going to visit with that attorney next. Later this hour, what's the future look like for St. Louis? Yeah, we've had so much talk over the last several years about whether the city and the county should merge. What would that look like? Is it even a realistic possibility? Does anybody want the city and county to merge that live here? And so we're going to visit about what some of the options might be for the future of St. Louis. Take some of your calls on that as well. And then 9 o'clock hour, we're going to have a nice little personal sit-down with our own Chris Raby. Get to know him a little bit, his background, where he came from, talk a little soccer with him. And then we're going to give you a preview on the upcoming Guns N' Hoses fundraiser for the Backstoppers, one of the great events that takes place every year right around Thanksgiving in St. Louis. It is just a phenomenal event. So lots to do, lots coming up. Look forward to taking some of your calls, too, later in the show. This is John Hancock. It's At Your Service on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
History is being made, and you're hearing it here. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. KMOX.
Hello again, everyone. John Hancock taking you through the next hour plus. Turn it over to Ryan Recker in Overnight America coming up at 10 o'clock. All of us have been following this just horrific tragedy of the wildfires in California, now the deadliest wildfires in that state's history. The fire up north has now claimed over 50 lives, and there's still dozens of people unaccounted for. And the fires in Southern California in the Los Angeles area, also very deadly, causing air quality issues. And I thought, who do I know that could talk to us about what's going on the ground? And it hit me. My cousin-in-law, I guess you call it a cousin-in-law. He married a beautiful Greek girl, and I married that beautiful Greek girl's cousin. And He has a great life down in Los Angeles, and he's kind enough to join us. John Peterson, welcome to KMOX in St. Louis.
Hi, John. How are you?
Doing great, man. This is quite a tragedy, and you guys, I mean, it seems like we were just down there for your son's wedding not too many months ago, and there were fires raging then. What's going on the ground right now in Southern Cal?
Well, you said horrific. That word applies. They're finally starting to get them under control. I heard today on the radio several areas that had been evacuated down here in Southern California were allowed to return home. But it really is a crazy situation where you've got these hillside areas, mountainous areas, and the winds combining to create these horrific firestorms. And it's just becoming a recurring event that we deal with every year, it seems.
Yeah, and it's this is that time of year now. Have you had any kind of personal experiences with friends, acquaintances, coworkers that have been flushed out of their homes through this?
Oh yeah, this time it's crazy because we're down here in Orange County, coastal Orange County, Newport Beach, where fortunately and thank God that we haven't been impacted personally, but several of our close family and friends have been. We've got close family friends in the Malibu area, where entire neighborhoods were burned to the ground. Our closest friend over there, actually the house survived, but the rest of the neighborhood literally burned. The grocery store, major supermarket over there, burned to the ground. Anecdotally, we have a niece that just got married last weekend. Her family owns the house where some of your listeners may know that bachelor house, the bachelorette house over there in the home in Agora area. Some of the structures on that property burned, but the house survived. The home survived, so anybody that watched that show, the home is still there. But up in Northern California, I've got clients. I just talked to a client. I was with him yesterday. His daughter and her family owns a home up in Paradise, which is up in Butte County. In Northern California, their home burned to the ground. Lots of land up there has burned. So it's just, fortunately, no one we know has perished. But still, it's a catastrophe. People are losing everything they have in their homes. Personal effects, their furniture, their furnishings, their homes. It's a tragedy.
Right, you just think about it on the human level, and it's devastating. And some of those pictures out of Paradise, I mean, it looks like a war zone. It's horrible.
It's absolutely crazy. And I was reading today in the local paper about they had an evacuation plan, and so that it didn't glut the streets with evacuees, they decided to stagger it, and they concluded maybe that wasn't the best plan. I mean, the problem is when you're dealing with these large scale events. What is the best way? And I mean, and it's oftentimes trial and error. I mean, so the responders, the first responders do the best they can, but it's just difficult. So
no question. We are visiting with John Peterson. He's an attorney from Southern California. He's reporting on the ground some of the effects of the wildfires down there. There was a news report that I heard this afternoon, John, that they're now warning and they're very concerned about potential mudslides happening. That's a real threat and something you have a particular expertise in.
Yeah, well, it is a real threat. In fact, I'm sure it applies elsewhere, but in California especially, there's what is known as a fire flood sequence. And what ends up happening is because so many of these fires occur in hillside areas or mountainous areas, well, what happens is these hillsides become denuded of the vegetation by virtue of the fires. But what also happens is as these fires, the heat is so intense that the resin and the sap in the vegetation literally vaporizes. And it, as it rises as vapor, as it cools, it comes down to the ground And as this vapor, before it solidifies again, turns back into its liquid form, it actually permeates the soil and can penetrate down a couple of inches and create a waxy layer beneath the surface. And I know this by virtue of some lawsuits I've been involved in after fires where floods were generated. So this hydrophobic layer, this waxy layer, ends up when the rains come. Excuse me. When the rains come, it creates a shallow layer of soil that is inundated with the water, and it almost like a slip and slide would just slide off layers of soil. And this creates this exacerbated landslide or debris flow or mud flow effect, so that after fires here in California, you know when the rains come. And we do tend to get, perhaps in parts of California, it may be dry, relatively speaking, to other parts of the country. But when the rains come, they come heavily. And so what ends up happening is you get these mud flows and debris flows that wreak as much havoc or more than the fires did in the first place. And it just becomes this cycle that we experience.
I think you may have dropped a hydrophobic layer for the first time ever on the airwaves here at the Voice of St. Louis. That's impressive stuff. Hey, one of the concerns as I look at this and the devastation, the loss of property, the loss of lives, what does it cost to insure property in California? It's got to be astronomical.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was in court yesterday with four other attorneys, all of whom do law similar to mine or related to what we do. And we were talking about how are these catastrophes, both the fires we have here, the storms we have here, and nationwide, what everybody has been experiencing with rains and hurricanes, how will this affect all of our homeowners insurance policies? And what, of course, we didn't have any clear answers, but it does appear that year by year, the insurers do tend to start limiting the coverage, charging more for some of the coverages that they may offer, where you don't typically get flood insurance in your ordinary homeowner's insurance policy. You may have to buy separate flood insurance. Well, we may, it may get to the point where we're seeing certain risks of fire won't be covered in certain areas without some special insurance that may be required for that. It's clearly going to be something that, since insurance is all about passing the risk, it's going to be borne by, I would say, everybody. I mean, it's a large risk to pass. I mean, we're hearing damage estimates on some of last year's fires. Putting aside the new fires, some of the last year's fires in California, I've heard numbers thrown about. I haven't verified it personally, but in excess of $500 billion for total losses. I mean, these are staggering losses.
They are indeed. Hey, before I let you go, not only do we have the same family in common, we also have a football team in common. The team that used to be here, that we don't care for the owner very much anymore, has now moved to Southern California, and lo and behold, they're 8-1, John Peterson. I'm talking about your L.A. Rams down there. And they've got a big game coming up on Monday Night Football at the Coliseum against the Kansas City Chiefs. Will you be in attendance at that game?
I will not be in attendance, but I will be watching. I think that was the game that was supposed to be down in Mexico, and they, because of some field conditions, they moved it to be played back up here in L.A. So
you are correct, sir. Well, he's been kind enough to join us on the Quiver River Electric guest line, John Peterson, attorney from Southern California. Thanks so much, sir. Have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you, John. Goodbye.
Bye. That was John Peterson. Hey, when we come back, what's the future for St. Louis? A lot of people are speculating that maybe we would do well to merge the city and the county. Others think that's a horrible idea. Our next guest is, he's one of the directors of Better Together, an effort that's looking at local governments. They've made a lot of findings over the last few years. Dave Leipoltz is going to join us, and that's after this on KMOX.
Breaking news, fast and first, always on KMOX.
Ah, In the Long Run by the Eagles. You know, I used to teach drum lessons years ago, and this was the piece I always used to introduce the young student to the drum set. A fascinating story there. Yeah. I guess. Anyway, I digress, because we're talking about the future of St. Louis and what things might look like. And for the past several years, there's been a group in town called Better Together that has been surveying and looking at local government and the costs of local government that we incur here in St. Louis. It's pretty darn high. And, you know, they've got a whole lot of different things in the works. They've talked to a whole lot of people. They've gone across the country and looked at how other cities and towns are formed. And I thought it might be interesting to get some of that perspective. And so joining us is one of the directors of Better Together, David Leipoltz. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. Dave, welcome to KMOX.
John, thanks for having me.
So let's start with some of the findings. You guys have been at this for, 3 years or longer?
About 4 years on the studies now.
Yeah, 4 years. So you've looked at a lot. And let's just start with this kind of weird, archaic structure of government where you've got the city of St. Louis that functions as its own county, and then you've got St. Louis County, and that those two really have nothing to do with one another, except there are a few areas. But let's talk about just that structure and some of the costs that are borne by residents because of it.
Sure. Yeah, when we first started, there was the city and the county, as you described, and then also at the time, there were 90 municipalities within St. Louis County, and now there are 88. And when we started, we really just wanted to get a baseline. There was a lot of talk of what our region should be structured like, if our structure was having an impact. And so our original studies were just compiling a lot of the data and the numbers. And what we found was, as you described, we're spending a lot more than other regions. We're in a lot of ways getting less in terms of our growth and our economic successes when we compare ourselves to peer regions. And that comes at a cost of, you know, nearly $750 million more each year throughout the St. Louis region than regions like Louisville, Nashville, and Indianapolis are paying.
So on a per capita basis, each and every individual taxpayer, it's what's the cost out of our own pocket for that?
Yeah, if you look at Indianapolis, it's, you know, for a family of four, nearly $3,000 a year. And then for a city like Louisville or Nashville, you know, it's somewhere maybe a little bit over that. And so what we're finding is that we have a lot of little government, and so it's just really inefficient. We have 56 police departments, 43 fire departments. We have 567 aldermen throughout the region. And so we just have a lot of government, and especially when you're trying to navigate that in the business world or even small business owners operating throughout the region, it's really a headache.
Do you think the structure of government in St. Louis has prevented us from maybe attracting more economic activity and businesses coming here?
Oh, sure. We hear that from folks all the time. You know, there is a real strength in St. Louis with the universities we have and the philanthropic community. We have a very engaged business community, but our structure is tough for people who are from here to navigate. So if you're looking at it from afar, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're not quite sure what to make of it. And, you know, you really start to ask, what's the vision for St. Louis? And you may ask 89 different mayors and get 89 different answers to that question. And then we also have a county executive and a lot of folks working on economic development. So it's not that even one answer is necessarily better or worse than the other. It's just that when a company nationally is looking for bids and you get four from the same region, that's a red flag.
So you talked earlier, you mentioned Indianapolis, you mentioned Louisville, I think. How are they structured differently from St. Louis?
So each of those regions is themselves a little bit different. Louisville still has 82 municipalities, for example, but they do policing together and a lot of the big public safety expenses together, because that's a bulk of their budget, and there's real savings to be had if you do that. We talked to some smaller fire departments who are paying maybe $300,000-$400,000 more for a fire truck than some of the larger ones, because they buy one at a time versus 10. And so just the simple savings that we, you know, as members of a household would experience from, you know, buying things together and buying in bulk, we don't even do that as a region. And so our structure is just really laden with a lot of overhead and overspend.
I'm sure you've heard it. I know I have over the many years that they're my friends in St. Louis County almost break out in hives at the thought of merging the city into the county in some fashion. And among the things that you hear is that, you know, there's a concern about the debt burden that would come with the city. How big of a hurdle is that?
You know, I think that there are many different ways, and that's what we got from looking around at other regions. There's a lot of ways to restructure or reform your region that can, you know, maintain some identity of local communities, that can take into account outstanding debts in different parts of the region and keeping those with the people that incurred them. So there's a lot of options with it, and I think that it can be a scary term because you hear, oh, we're going to take on all their debt. That's really not how it works. You know, Kirkwood's not going to inherit Webster's debt any more than these communities are going to inherit St. Louis City's debt. And so we try to educate people around that because, you know, there is a lot of nuance to it. There's a lot of data out there and really hasn't been made public until we started issuing some of our reports.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that's different now, I think, because we've been through various iterations of thinking about reform for decades. I remember back when Gene McNary was county executive and he came up with the Board of Freeholders concept that was just going to affect St. Louis County. But it seems to me that there's a growing understanding by people and by leaders in the community. I'm talking about business leaders, civic leaders, educational leaders. That something has got to be done and that what the way we are set up right now just isn't working. One of the things that I looked at many, many years ago when I was in the legislature, which was many, many years ago, it was just the cost of these county offices in the city. You're talking about the license collector and the circuit clerk and the treasurer, and all of these offices that are county offices. And the city has a whole slew of them, and they're full of largely patronage jobs. And, of course, St. Louis County has those. In the city, a lot of them are elected positions. In the county, they're almost all appointed positions. Mm-hmm. But just the sheer cost of maintaining that has got to be astronomical.
Yeah, we have a structure that hasn't really been updated. So not only do we have a lot of, overspend, we have a whole maze of kind of an antiquated structure that has really been light on technology improvements. And a lot of the streamlining we've seen in every other sector has not really sunk down into the government we experience. And so we live in a world where we can order dinner and do our holiday shopping on our phone, but to get a simple document, a birth certificate or anything like that, we have to go around and bounce around a few offices, different buildings, or, you know, to get a business up and running, we have to get inspections from a couple different entities. And so, you know, when you have that type of structure, you're just going to it's going to be more expensive. You're going to need more manpower for it. And so we really haven't modernized our government the way that businesses and the rest of our life have.
We are visiting with David Leipholz. He's a director of Better Together, that effort taking a look at our governing structure here in St. Louis. Dave, you and I were having a chat, a couple weeks ago, I think it was, and you told me a story about a food truck. You remember that?
Yes.
I thought that was fascinating. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was a nonprofit who is essentially bringing fresh groceries to food deserts. And in order to do that, he not only has to recalibrate and do all the different sales taxes depending on what block or what municipality he's in, but he also has to get different licenses and inspections and OKs to do that. And so just for somebody who's trying to, I think we would all agree, improve our region and provide healthy food to people who don't otherwise have it, you know, if it's that hard for him and for that organization, you know, there's companies that do catering in, you know, 15, 16 different municipalities. And there, you know, are contractors that work across the region and all these different entities. So we really don't make it easy to live, work, and play here. I mean, and when I say play, I mean it. I was talking to someone the other day who was out with a photographer for family photos, and they got kicked out of a park because unbeknownst to them, they were in a different municipality, and you have to pay to get a permit to take any pictures in there. And so, I mean, it's really gotten kind of ridiculous where it seems everybody has one of these stories or the other.
So in the little bit of time we have left, you've looked at a lot of these places. Let's just say that there was a desire to go to some sort of structure that, you know, if you just look at one of the things that plagues St. Louis in terms of reputation, the crime statistics in the city of St. Louis, because mm-hmm. the population is so small and yep. crime statistics are reported on a per capita basis. And so we're being examined as a city of 300,000 people with other much, much larger population areas. If St. Louis was all one area, would we still be the most dangerous city in America?
No, that's one of the things that we're always, I feel like, trying to point out to people throughout the country is that it's essentially if you took a section of another city and carved around it.
South side of Chicago.
Yeah, perfect example. And, that's one of the image issues that we battle. And if we were structured like many of these other places within the county, you know, we'd be in the upper 20s, 30s. It wouldn't even be part of the conversation of those rankings. And so I think that the issue with that, though, is we rely on people coming here and getting here and learning that St. Louis is a fantastic place. And increasingly, we're in a world where people Google to get information on things, whether they're looking to expand an office or to relocate or for their kids to go to school. And so, you know, whether you live in, you know, Maryland Heights or Webster or wherever you may be, people think of that as St. Louis. And so it's really a regional issue. We need to address it regionally, I believe. And it really paints a picture that's both not accurate and not flattering. And those are issues that other regions, when they do consolidate or unify in some way, really start to embrace together, because there's this admission, okay, these are our issues, we can deal with these. And when you go to an Indy or a Nashville or a Louisville, you almost see a confidence in approaching those issues. And they embrace them, they put all their resources behind it, and they fix it.
Well, there's no question but that those communities are growing, vibrant communities. And I want to thank you for your time. We've been visiting with Dave Leipholz. He's a director with Better Together in St. Louis. Appreciate it, David. Have yourself a good rest of the evening. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, John.
Yep. When we come back, 436-7900, 1-800-925-1120, this idea of the city and the county becoming one. I bet a lot of you think that's a particularly lousy idea. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though, at 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. To merge or not to merge, that is the question. We'll tackle it after this on KMOX.
KMOX, first and accurate. Depend on it.
Hey there, John Hancock. It is at your service, wrapping up the 8 o'clock hour. I'll be with you in the 9 o'clock hour as well. We were talking about the work that Better Together has done over the last 4 years, looking at the cost of local government here in St. Louis. And I got to tell you, I was a strident opponent to any kind of city-county merger effort for a long time. I just didn't think it made sense. I thought that there was some sort of compromising reforms we could have made in terms of getting rid of the county offices in the city, but there was no stomach for that. And, you know, this is not exactly a community that embraces change all that frequently that we live in. And I love St. Louis. I've raised my family here. I was raised here. It's home to me. It will always be home to me. And I love it and I care about it. And I have to say, what has begun to sway my thinking on this is the profound cost of government that we have in this town and all of the different governments and elected officials that we're paying for and the duplicative services that we're paying for. And if you live in the city or work in the city, you're paying the earnings tax in the city as well. And the profound cost of it is a real problem. I wonder what you think. 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Let's go to the phones, and Jim is joining us. Jim, you're on KMOX.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Well, I think we should establish a fund that the 88, you know, that the mayors and chiefs of police and fire chiefs of these 88 municipalities can, you know, draw from in order to help maintain their interests through the merger.
Yeah. So do you find yourself supporting a merger, Jim?
Well, mainly the fund. I want to build a big pot full of money that we can, you know, draw from and pay attorneys that go into court and represent our interests through the merger so that, you know, so that our interests are represented well. We wouldn't want, you know, the mayor of Kinloch to not be represented well through the merger.
Do you live in the city or in the county?
No.
Oh, you don't live in either the city or the county?
No, neither one of them.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. Well, thank you for your thought, Jim. With a big pot of money, it solves a lot of problems. That was Jim who was joining us. I think, you know, there's some concern, I think, if you went to a unified government of some kind, I've heard everything from as simple as just making the city a municipality in St. Louis County so that the city would continue to be governed by its own mayor, and it would just be one of a number of municipalities. I've heard that option discussed. I've also heard an option that I find kind of interesting that would actually liquidate the city of St. Louis. So, poof, it would be gone. The city would just become an unincorporated part of St. Louis, and the whole, then what is now city and county, would simply be St. Louis, Missouri. If you did something like that, we would be the eighth or ninth largest city in the country by population. And it would give you one economic development entity to try and attract and retain businesses. It would give you one, potentially, a police department that would police St. Louis. That would be the level of training would be standardized then. I would imagine that a lot of the municipalities that have police departments, out where I live in Chesterfield, certainly a very good police force there, Florissant, good police force. A lot of those officers, I would assume, would become officers in the new St. Louis Police Department. And you would have just one of them and would have some considerable savings, I would think, if you were policing yourselves that way. And so that's an option. So you've got to bring the city into the county as a municipality. You've got to liquidate the city altogether as a possibility. And, you know, people think, well, there's just no way. There's no way that voters in the city, voters in St. Louis are going to ever approve something like that. And you're probably right about that. But what if the new structure were something that required, say, a vote statewide, and where all Missourians would, because you would basically be creating, in some regards, a new class of county, which is governed by the state constitution. So that would require a statewide vote. Then if you started doing that, and you talked about really the ability to really save real tax dollars in the way we structure what is St. Louis, and that would have an effect on all of the state's taxpayers. Maybe there's a pathway there where some kind of really significant, meaningful reform could happen. Because look at Indianapolis, look at Nashville. Have you been to those places lately? They are thriving. They're growing business opportunities. They're growing corporate headquarters there. Absolutely thriving. Even Louisville doing incredibly well. Look at these places that have gone to one of these more modern structures of government. They pay a lot less for their government than we do locally. And it seems to me like they're thriving economically. So there could be something to this in the long run. I have no idea when something like that would happen. And I have no idea if it would pass. But, you know, the other thing that you all may be aware, the city of Detroit went into default several years ago, and the state of Michigan had to bail them out. Now, I'm not saying that St. Louis is necessarily in that position, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility to think that the way this place is governed over here, you know, in City Hall, that, you know, the St. Louis could go belly up. They certainly you know, they've maxed out their sales tax capacity. They're running a very lean budget that is not in balance very often. So who knows? Well, it's an interesting conversation, and I'm just glad that we were able to have it for a little bit, and it's something that we all need to think about. Hey, next hour is coming around. We're going to visit with our own Chris Raby. What a great guy. That's just around the corner on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.